hello, hello, and welcome back to the Arts Report on CITR 101.9 FM. Today is Wednesday, October 9th, and we are broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia Vancouver campus, which is unceded and stolen Musqueam territory. Indigenous voices in so-called Canada have been systematically devalued and diminished, and this cannot go unacknowledged in broadcast media such as radio. To hear more, please listen to Unceded Airwaves from CITR's Indigenous Collective. My name is Serena. I'm the host and lead of the Arts Collective, and I'm joined in the studio by so many lovely faces today. So if you guys want to all introduce yourselves, we can start over here.
Hi, I'm Maya, and yeah, happy to be here.
Hi, I'm Margot.
Hello, I'm Django.
And I'm Ava.
My name is Rena.
Hi, Cecilia here.
And my name is Mickey.
Yay, and I'm so happy to have you guys all here. We have a jam-packed episode, honestly, and a jam-packed studio, so that works out well. So I want to kick it off by passing it over to Rena to talk about an awesome show that you went to, I want to say, like 2 weeks ago now?
Yeah, I think it's like just 2 weeks ago, but it was so crazy. It was like a Afro Rack show, so they're also a collective, just like us.
Just like
but
us. Twin them.
Twin them. No, low-key, I was kind of begging at the door to get in, so I kind of went blind, but super slick. Three openers, one guy. First guy, it was like, what is it, Screamo? Like, he started, like, screaming, and there was, but then he started, like, replaying his screams, so he kept, like,
wow.
Harmonizing. It was a crazy vibe. For a second, I did think, what is going on, but then I enjoyed myself, and, yeah, it was at Redgate. I love that venue, mm-hmm. And there was always, like, it was kind of millennial madness, a lot of millennials, but
that's a good term. That's
it was
such
a good
term.
Yeah, like, I love to see them dance. I love to see them have fun, so it was a great time, but, yeah, that's basically about it.
And I've heard, like, some things about Afrorec being, like, a very, like, what would the word be, like, ingenious artist, like, in the actual technical setup.
Yeah, there was a lot of machines going on, and I had no idea, but it definitely sounded, like, technically advanced. Like, there was a lot of layers on it, and they kept building it, like, live, so it was really interesting, and every single artist that performed had such a different, like, personal style to them, but overall, I really enjoyed myself, and I like that, like, you know, Redgate is so much of, like, a smaller, like, intimate venue that every opener would perform at a different part of the room, which I thought was super cool.
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah, so, like, it would be, like, 5 minutes mingle, and then, like, all of a sudden, like, you would look to your left, and there would be, like, a full setup. So,
wow,
that was kind of fire.
That's so cool.
It was so fire.
The only thing I know about Afrorec, and this is my own, like, ignorance, is that he builds his own setup, like, completely from scratch.
Yeah, yeah. And then he's also, I believe, like, a super big advocate for, like, making music accessible and, like, and like, sound engineering accessible. So he provides, like, workshops, and, like, the collective provides, like, a bunch of different, like, free resources to anyone who wants to be involved. So they do that on the back end.
Wow.
So they're, like, a very holistic movement, yeah.
That's super awesome. You also went to a different show.
I also went to Faye Webster.
Faye Webster, give it up.
Yes. Wait, I feel like other people went, right?
Yeah, Maya went as well, and so did I. Mm-hmm. Do you wanna hop in here? Yeah, there we go.
Yes, Serena and I went, had a blast.
Wait, where did you sit, can I ask?
We were, like, up on the balcony. But, like, pretty close to the front. I want to say, like,
right balcony.
Right balcony.
Yeah.
Which was, like, I feel like I'm not a big balcony seat kind of guy usually, mm-hmm. But this
I
was,
I liked it. It was, like, perfect.
It was good.
This was good.
Yeah.
Such, like, an awesome show, truly.
True. I will say, Miss Orpheum, if you are watching, I did buy upper bowl tickets, but then there was, like, the front row seats at the lower bowl was empty, so then we did move.
Oh.
But, I mean, hey, sunk cost. They weren't, no one's taking them, so it was a good vibe.
I have a quick Orpheum story if I can tell it.
Yeah.
During the Big Thief concert, me and my friend were exploring, and we went too high up to, like, the top floor, and we got, like, chased, like, these people came in and were like, hey, you can't be here. But they were really chill, and they told us ghost stories about the place. So, yeah, Orpheum's
but
very haunted.
But they were
haunted.
The ghost the
yeah,
whole
maybe.
Time. And then you pulled a mask off, and then they're like...
It was Scooby-Doo, actually. So,
it was
yeah.
Scooby-Doo himself.
Yes. He's behind me.
He's right behind me. That's so funny.
That was so good. And I went to the one she went to last year. She was at Vogue, mm-hmm. and that was definitely a lot smaller.
I heard really bad things about that show. And
oh,
I
yeah.
was,
me too.
I was super nervous to, like, buy tickets and go to Faye Webster, because, like, I love her, but, like, I would literally tell people, like, oh my god, like, I'm so excited going to see Faye Webster, and they're like, ooh.
Like, crowd vibe,
like, no.
Or just, like, her?
Well, I mean, like, we'll take some disclaimer, because it was at the Vogue, and, like, as you all know, I'm a Vogue hater. They literally don't play the music loud enough. It's, yeah. like, quiet in there. Their sound system is so bad. And, yeah, so I'm a Vogue hater, so, like, I'll give her a little bit of credit. But apparently it was just, like, she wasn't very, like, performative, I guess, was, like, a lot of people's complaint. Like, she kind of just, like, stood there, like, played some songs and didn't really interact. But I don't know, maybe she was having a bad day or something, because I thought that, like, this show was
yeah,
super,
she was
like...
so different.
Like, the whole, like, Minion, like, theme.
Yeah. Bye, bye, bye.
Like, Minion theme and, like, playing around with, like, the opener, like, Meihara.
Yeah.
They were so awesome. The bassist was, like, falling
me.
Over, like,
the
into
bassist.
The drums.
Oh, my God. I have a video. So he was, like, what, voguing? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yes.
He was going crazy.
He went down. He literally went down.
He was literally, like, doing, like, a lick on the bass and then also, like doing the, like you know the Russian dance where you, like, put your legs out? I don't
no,
know what
he,
it's called.
No, yeah, Rus routine.
Like that.
Yeah. The Just Dance Rus routine.
It was actually so cool. Yeah, literally.
He
was
getting off stars. A death drop? Is that
no,
what
he actually
saying?
Fell.
Oh, well, he just made it look really cool.
He was so lit. He just
he
like came
so
out randomly
lit.
In the
and
middle of like a Faye Webster song. And then Meihara and Faye Webster did their song together over sleep or overslept.
Yeah. Overslept.
And it was so beautiful. And like Faye was crying so much and they were like hugging. And she was like, you're such a big inspiration to me and I can't believe you're here. And it was like, wow, not this whole, like, stadium of people witnessing this, like, super intimate,
yeah,
beautiful moment.
I was like, wait, can I be watching this?
Yeah, no, literally. But it was awesome. Super awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
And me and Django and Maya also went to Chanel Beads, which was
Mr. Beads.
So awesome.
It was so good.
And, like, such an incredibly different vibe. Also, just putting that out there for the people that don't know.
Yeah, Wise Hall. First time there, the best, that was the coolest
super,
place in the world.
Awesome.
I don't think there's a better venue in Vancouver.
Really?
I'd put like hot take, whatever.
Same wait, me. But like, let's talk about this.
Okay, Vogue, bad. All those ones on Granville, Pearl.
But why is the Wise like...
It's just like so deep into Vancouver and it's just like you go
deep, bro.
And I walked up and there was like the smoke machine was on. And it
it's
looked
true.
Like I was. It was like
it really
an old
gives,
community
like, school
center.
Gym.
Yeah,
because
like,
it's a community center.
Up.
Because
yeah,
it is
yeah.
a community center.
I mean, because it was probably once.
No, but
yeah, 100%.
I know what you mean. You're
but,
so indie.
Yeah. What can I say? Yeah. No, it was great. I mean, like, the Fox is also really cool. I like the Fox.
Like the
but
Fox.
The Fox, like, I no hate.
And
on
you're going
them.
To the
yeah.
Biltmore tonight.
Yeah, Biltmore tonight. Yeah, Biltmore's sick too.
Yeah. Plug tonight.
The Blank Vinyl Project versus Battle of the Bands is going on tonight.
And
in like doors open in an hour, so.
And CITR Shindig coming up in November too. Be there, be freaking square. And submissions are open. If you're listening to this and you're a band, you should submit a mixtape. A mixtape? A demo.
Yeah. Send me your
a
tape,
demo.
Bro. Send me your tape.
You should make me a playlist. No. But Chanel Beads was super awesome. And Mary Jane Dunphy was, like, the opener. And she was
so
cool.
Awesome. Yeah, she's...
Got really,
yeah.
like... also, like, a big performer.
Very,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Got really, like... You know when, like, you can... I don't know if this makes sense, but you know when you're at, like, a smaller show, so you're, like, kind of close to the performer, and you can see them kind of, like purposefully looking over the crowd to, like, not... Like, to just, like, get in the zone... And, like, not even think about it. And she was so, like, in her own world.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
That was, like, really, really fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, like, just her, too, which is crazy. Like, she didn't have, like, any crazy, like, lights or anything like that. And it was just so, like, raw and, like, wow.
It was very, like, captivating.
Very.
Yeah. And Chanel Beads was awesome, too.
Yeah, they were really good.
Even though he, like, screamed a bunch during my favorite song.
Yeah. Which... is funny. I later retorted a bit of it, and
when I watched the video, like,
you hear it way more.
I know, at the time.
I didn't even hear him noticing it. I'm like rewatching it back. He's just yelling the entire time, which was like fun. It's fun to watch, but
yeah, kind of a little bit unexpected. And so that wasn't the only thing that went on this weekend. We also had some lovely people who went to some VIFF films. Does anybody want to talk about their VIFF experience?
Yeah, sure. I can start. So I went to this VIFF film event called Eno, and it was about a documentary about Brian Eno. And Brian Eno is like an English songwriter, musician, and a producer. And the director, Gary Hutzwe, who actually directed this film, like, he did record the films and, like, the clips himself. But then the interesting thing was that, like, this entire film was AI-generated. It was, like, a generative film. So, the film was being made in real time, which I thought to be, like, really interesting. So, the film was, like, consisting of, like, a lot of... like interviews, which I thought was like really witty, and I really liked the background music overall as well. And
was it all like Brian Eno songs for the background?
I don't think they were all Brian Eno songs.
Oh, okay.
So but like, so honestly, I don't know a lot of his songs, so I couldn't really tell. But pretty sure it wasn't. Yeah, but like all the different clips, they were shuffled, and like the transitions, but in between like the transitions, it showed like file names and the codes, so it kind of appeared like a glitch rather than like having a smooth transition. And the film was very unique in a sense that it would never be the same every time you screen it.
So is it like I'm just trying to kind of visualize what you're talking about. Is it kind of like they had a bunch of footage and then it's like almost every time they show it, it's like shuffled and it's like in a different order?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Like taking like some things in and out?
Yeah, exactly.
But I feel like kind of having it be like the transitions being like a glitch theme is like, that's kind of a cop-out. Do you know what I mean? If like you're bragging that like this is like a film that's like stitched together, like new every time, but then your whole thing is that it's disjointed. I don't know. I didn't see it. So maybe it did feel... Did it feel smooth, like, when you were watching it?
No. Definitely not smooth. But I think that was the entire point.
Okay.
I think that was the, like, point of it, of, like, not being smooth. Because, like, later in the QA sessions, the director said, like, he filmed, like, so many clips that even he lost track of, like, how many clips he has. And he just, like, started to upload everything and the data and, like, the... Like the AI that was being used, like, now just kind of, like, randomly shuffled it. And it's not just about the orders, right? Like, there are, like, so many different clips. So it just, like, turns out to be, like, so many different results. Go ahead.
Just out of, like, curiosity, did it all kind of, like, come together by the end? Like, you felt like you had gotten a holistic picture? Kind of, like, not to say that this is similar at all, but, like, kind of like Pulp Fiction, where by the end, even though it's been completely disjointed, you still walk away feeling like you've understood the story?
Partially, yes. But partially, like, it wasn't, like, not all of the clips were about, like, the interviews and, like, about, like, Brian Eno, like, himself. Like, a lot of it was, like, about his music-making process and, like, his approaches to music. So it did, like, involve, like, different, like, musicians and, like, a little bit of, like, other stories kind of out of track, like, on the sidetrack. But, like, overall, I would say, like, if I had to, like, phrase it in, like, one word or, like, one phrase, it was, like, a documentary about him, like, at the end of the day, right? So, yeah, I would say, like, still, it was, like, pretty coherent, I think. Yeah, but yeah, it was like really, it made me think a lot about like AI generative films, because this one was only like partially generated, right? It wasn't like completely generated by AI from scratch, but like since like now the technology, like we have like images completely generated by AIs, even though it like gives you like six fingers. So yeah, it made me think about like the future of film. Yeah. Wonder if there's going to be like a fully AI generated film, right?
That
would be kind of weird.
It's also like they're using an artist that is maybe like slightly less relevant right now, but like a concept that's super relevant right now. Do you know what I mean? Not saying that Brian Eno isn't fantastic or revolutionary or whatever, but just like he's from like the 80s and the 90s. So it's so interesting to use footage that I'm guessing at least some of it was from like the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, and then using that and putting that into the AI instead of like kind of, I don't know, like that's just so interesting.
It's like a real splicing of the times.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the whole movie was splice themed.
Yeah,
even.
Exactly.
So
see what I did there.
You get me.
Yeah,
you
I was
get
picking
it.
Up what you were putting down.
Do you want to talk about your film that you
went
to see?
Yeah, of course. So this weekend was actually my first VIFF experience. It was such a pleasure to be able to be there, especially on behalf of the CITR. The whole time I was like, wow, like I'm so special just to be like out here seeing a VIFF film, you know? Well, I don't know. It felt really nice. But I saw Rafiki, which is a story about two Kenyan women who fall in love and the tribulations of trying to experience their love story in a place that had a lot of religious pressures against their love. And I think the story did a really good job at portraying the happy moments of being able to share such an intimate experience, but also be realistic that that isn't the entire story. And it did have to include some more violent moments, but it did so in a way that was tasteful and wasn't indulging itself in like the gore that films do sometimes. It didn't feel like I was watching this to like see the violence happening and that was what the director was going for. Like it was very clear that in those moments it was about expressing like the pain, and I really appreciated that it wasn't overindulging and kind of like taking something and using it to just, you know, make a story out of it. And so I really appreciated that.
Yeah, like that idea of like, yes, this is like one part of the narrative, but it's not like every single thing. Like there's almost like humanizing the experience too. Like this isn't a movie about the violence. This is a movie about like these two people and like their situation. And like, obviously that's a factor in their like situation, but it's not like the entire plot.
Yeah, exactly. And also not just like really dredging on those kinds of scenes. Like, and it, you know, the camera would do certain things and they were shot in ways that I felt like made it palatable as an audience member where I didn't feel, sometimes those, it can be like overwhelming, especially as a queer audience member. And I felt like I was able to watch that and still enjoy the movie, but still be able to come face to face with the reality of these kinds of circumstances. And so I thought it was shot in really well intention.
That's like a super high compliment for a film, I think, like shot in well intention.
Yeah. And I also like, I still came away thinking about like, I remember as the end credits were rolling, I like pulled out my phone really quickly so I could get a photo of like all the different songs that they'd used in the movie, because I was like, wow, the soundtrack for this was amazing. Like I still really appreciated like the makeup that they did here and like the use of color. And I didn't walk away with only like a heavy feeling in my heart, even though the movie still ended on like a really, I'd say, hard note, a pill, like a hard pill to swallow.
Do you want to like talk a little bit about the plot of the
film? Sure, I can go a little more in depth. So in the film, there's two men running for like, I can't remember exactly what they call the position, but a political position. And they both have daughters and they are both, they didn't quite go into identities, but they're both queer.
And they're kind of like Romeo and Juliet, like the two. Like,
exactly.
Houses.
Yeah. So they're from opposing families.
Okay.
And first they start hanging out and everyone's like, no, don't do that. Like your dad is running against my dad. There's all this money going into the campaign and everything. And they start hanging out and, you know, they'd go off to like the next town so they could spend the night dancing together. And there were these scenes of them like dancing with glowing, like glow sticks and all those sorts of things. And, you know, I felt like they did a really good job like highlighting that in the beginning where they were like really falling into love with each other. But then there was like a lot of tension about them hanging out in general. And then also because they were so in love and also quite young, their naivety kind of got not the best of them, but they weren't doing the most to kind of like hide their circumstance. And it was very clear that the town they were in was very religious and it was not okay to be queer. And then they were found together in a romantic setting, and then they were, I don't know quite how violent I can describe this, but they were dragged out, and unfortunately a group of men beat them. And so yeah, that was the scene where I was talking about where they had to shoot it kind of in well intention, because they didn't ever show any physical hits or anything, but you could see the commotion. You could feel the energy of what it would be like to kind of be in that circumstance where they're reaching out for the other person, but at the same time they're the one like also being attacked. And they did a really good job of like sustaining their injuries throughout the rest of the film. Like, they had, like, physical markings on their face, but you would never see them, like, actively experiencing, like, the violence, yeah. like, skin-to-skin contact. And I thought that that was a really key choice.
Like, tasteful.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's really where I felt like, you have made me, like, feel something really deep in this moment, but at the same time, like, it's not, like, about, like, the physical exact injury they're experiencing. Like, it's about the situation and the commotion. And then at the end of the film, one of the women moves away to London because her parents had quite a bit of money and they didn't approve of the romance and they wanted to physically separate the two. Mm. And that's what I saw as the real ending, technically. They're like, after many years, then one of them goes on to be a doctor. And then she comes back and there's this scene where they, one hand reaches out to the other and they meet in a field. And I'm like, okay, but this is still like a highly like intense situation. It's not exactly like they're...
It's not resolved.
You're sort of like, yeah, you can imagine what happens next. But from my perspective, I was like, but what has really changed? But yeah, so... That was sort of the over... Sorry, spoilers if anyone wanted to go out and watch that film, but
I think that's okay.
That was the story.
We can put a spoiler alert
in
the description.
Yeah, we'll put a spoiler alert in the beginning.
That sounds like good art. And I feel like that's also like a conversation I've been having recently about like cheap entertainment versus like high quality entertainment. And like if we accept the definition of like art as being like something that makes you feel an emotion, like it elicits a reaction from you. Mm-hmm. That is such a broad, like elicits a reaction from you. That could be literally anything.
Oh my gosh.
And we do sometimes let it be literally anything. Right? Yeah. There's like that whole debate in like mm-hmm. modern art. But like you had the emotion and you felt like you were there and you felt like you understood and you're experiencing it, but you don't have to be shown in graphic detail.
Because as I was watching the climactic scene, like, I was gut-wrenched. And I mean, I still feel the emotion coming over me now as I'm talking about it, but I didn't, like, I felt fear and I felt intensity, but I didn't feel, like, that shock, that horror that you feel, like, when you're watching, like, a horror film.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, about that violence and about, like, sort of, like, taking that fear and, like, that's the only point. Like, my emotions weren't coming, they were coming from a place of, like, I cared about these characters. I could feel the pain that they were feeling, not only as themselves, but as two people in that circumstance together.
Mm-hmm. Is it based on a true story or is it like all
It was
fiction?
Based on a book or
okay.
It might have been a short story. I can't quite remember which it was. It did say that at the beginning of the film.
But it's not like real characters.
No, it's not
okay.
real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking of something when you were saying that, but has anybody seen The Substance? I haven't seen it.
I can pass them like to, but oh, yeah.
No, I've not seen it, but I really would love to see it. Because we should
like,
all go see it.
Yeah, honestly, should we all go see it?
Like, can you give a little like trip? Tease well, for those who don't know?
I mean, I haven't seen it truthfully, so I don't know how much of a description I can give, but it's just about this woman who's aging and she is given something called the substance to like make her young and beautiful again, and it's like that kind of. I don't know, duality or whatever, but it's a body horror film. And that is like what I was thinking of when you're saying this, that like they didn't show that stuff. And it's so interesting because right now, like at this exact moment, there's a film that like people are like super talking about, it's in the discourse, whatever, that is like incredibly graphic. And that's what people love about it, right? That they're like, this is awesome. Like, yeah, like, oh my God, blood and eyeballs and whatever. But I also was like, actually, so funny, side note, my soci prof brought it up. He's, like, a 55-year-old man, and he brought up The Substance because he was like, there's always, like, an evil aging woman, like, out to get you in society. But he was being sarcastic, and he's like, this is, like, a narrative
this
that, like...
This is what they're afraid of.
This
Not
is
the
a
aging
narrative
woman.
that always gets, like, pushed in one way or another. Like, do you know what I mean? You think you've gone away from it, and it'll come back in a different form. And that made me, like, I haven't seen the movie, so I can't give it a critique necessarily. But it is so interesting that, like, there's so many people our age and, like, women and, like, do you know what I mean? Generally leftist people or whatever that are super into this film. And, like, I haven't seen it. But to me, it is really, like, a little bit, like, vilifying women again. And it's like, oh, women that just, like, care so much about their appearances. And it doesn't really ask that question of, like, okay, why is she having to go to all these lengths, like, in a systemic societal way to, like, take these crazy, whatever the substance is, and, like, you know, experience this? I don't know. It doesn't have that, like...
I wonder with that, like, point of view, I think it will be interesting when, like, we all
when
go
we
see
all
this
go
movie
see it.
To have that in mind, because I wonder what if that is going to be something that they say in this movie.
I have a feeling that it's not that, like, insightful. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I feel like from what you said, like, I could almost see how, like, for, like, that movie specifically where you're saying, like, oh, she's going to all these crazy lengths. Like, maybe you do need to see, like, those nitty-gritty details to, like, understand the extremes of, like, what is happening. And I think that that is how you have to think about violence. Like, does actually seeing it in, like, this kind of graphic context, does it actually help this art? Does it actually enhance this message? As opposed to, are we kind of just indulging ourselves in, like, seeing this kind of gore? And that's really where I felt like this movie made the distinction and said, you know what? It actually doesn't help our piece.
Yeah.
And there is going to be another side of that coin, and maybe the substance is that. Maybe it's not. But that's just something that I was really thinking about and came away from that movie thinking.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I'd love to pass it on to... I know we had lots of lovely people see lots of lovely things. If someone else wants to go.
I can totally talk about, if that's all right with you, Mickey, I can talk about my movie.
Yeah, more than all right. No worries.
Okay. So, yeah, I also...
Chivalry isn't dead.
Guys, don't worry. I also went to a little VIF film. And side note, I actually had to bring my passport because I was at the 19 plus one and I lost my wallet. So I had to go back and get my passport.
Oh, no.
So by the time we were there, we were, like, placed in the very front left seat. So, like, I think my experience of this movie might be drastically
different.
Did you
miss, like, some of the film?
Like, 5 minutes. So, yeah. But it was really good. I saw Happy End, which is a Japanese-American drama directed by, I think his name is Neo Sora. I can double check. I think it's Neo Sora. Yeah, Neo Sora. And it was really fun. I mean, it's, I can give you a little synopsis if you'd
like.
Okay. It basically follows the lives of a bunch of teenagers who go to this school in Japan, and they're kind of, the setting is like near future, kind of like not really dystopian, but kind of just very like increasingly surveillance state like vibe. And they're kind of just in this school and they go to class and they have friends, but they're kind of being increasingly told what to do all the time. And like one of the main plot points is that after one of the teachers' cars is vandalized, they implement like this crazy surveillance system where they can like track everybody. And it's interesting because I went into this movie expecting it to be kind of a bit more dystopian, like not like Maze Runner, but kind of more like, oh my gosh, like climate disaster, like surveillance state, like everything's like going to crap. But it was a lot more lighthearted than I anticipated, which was nice.
Happy End.
yeah, I mean, it was just a lot more, like, humorous. And it was interesting because, like, the authority figures who were kind of, like, infringing on their, like, their freedom or whatever, they weren't, like, these evil characters. They were just kind of, like, there and kind of just surveilling them. And I think it was an interesting kind of commentary on how important it is, like, as a adolescent to like have kind of easy and somewhat harmless ways to like rebel, and the fact that they were living in, one could say, like the present day, it just made it difficult for them to get away with anything. Even like if they wanted to, like, I don't know, trespass a little bit or like listen to music at night, like they couldn't do any of that. And so it was very interesting, and it was a very beautiful film. I really enjoyed like the way that it was shot, and I found it very, very intentional.
Yeah.
Like Ava said, which was nice.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that idea of like the surveillance state has been, at least for me, and like the things that have been going on recently, has definitely been like very front of mind. So that's interesting to hear it in that way. I kind of,
yeah. I found it interesting how I was expecting more of like kind of like a crazy vibe in terms of like the totalitarian regime that they were in, like based on the synopsis
and it was
of
literally
the film.
Just real
but
life.
I was like, this is low-key my life. And that itself kind of made me a little scared because I was
that's
like,
such a smart way to make you think about it. That's,
I don't know,
such a like intelligent choice on the filmmaker's part.
Mm-hmm. Like it was very much like background, there's protests going on against the government, but like the kids, the characters themselves, aren't actively engaging in these things, and like, but it's in the background and you see it. But the violence and like the active oppression isn't yet happening to them because they're still within the confines of, like, well, like, the confines, but, like, the safety of being children. And, like, you can see how all of this is kind of creeping into their lives, like, in their school, and how they can't really do anything wrong anymore. They can't really skip class because, like, Big Brother's essentially on them. But they, it's all very kind of, like, chill. I don't know how to explain it, but it's interesting, yeah. And the characters are super cute. Yeah, makes you think.
I'd like to see that. I wonder if it'll
I would
ever...
recommend it, for
yeah.
sure.
I wonder
yeah.
if I'll see it. Mickey, do you want to get into your film a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. So I saw Hanami maybe like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago now. And one of the things that stuck... Well, first, let me say it was at the VIF Center, which I did quite enjoy. It was like an easy commute, and it was just like easy to find right next to the bus, like super like well lit up. There were snacks. Like, it was just nice.
Okay. What kind of snacks? Like, what did you have?
They had a bunch of things, but I had actually brought like some... I was trying mini Doritos for the first time, like, that I brought, like, from, like, a snack shop because I didn't think they would have.
Wait, like, one of those snack like, shops? Like, the, like, shops dedicated to snacks?
Yeah.
Is that, whoa, I've never been to those.
I know. Yeah, the, well, so if you're ever in the area. But, yeah, so I got a couple snacks, and then I was like, oh, my God, but they're also selling snacks here. And so I did get, like, a small popcorn, like, in the spirit of watching a film. But, yeah, so I loved the venue. That was nice. But one of the first things that stood out to me was that it just was like a beautiful film. Like, it was like super pretty to look at. It was set on Cape Verde, like or I think an island off of Cape Verde, and like a volcanic island. So like they were very much there. Like, it wasn't like a green screen or anything. It was like super nice. And it was also in, like, Cape Verde Creole. So, like that's what they were speaking in. So I was, like, reading English subtitles. So that was also, like, an interesting element. But, yeah, I guess, like, a summary is, like, it's kind of talking about how, like, the thing about this island is that, like, everybody always wants to leave. Like, nobody actually wants to, like, live there. Like, it's just kind of like a... circumstance, but like if you have the opportunity to like get off the island, like you do. And so like that's kind of what happened to the main character, who's like a young girl. Her mother, like, I guess wasn't doing great or something, and then had the opportunity to leave the island, so she left. And then so it leaves the girl behind, and she's just kind of like raised by the other women in her community. But funny enough, like, I thought that was going to be kind of like the like key point, but then that seemed to not actually be like such a big deal. Like, I don't know, like, I thought it was gonna be like they were really stressing on like, oh, like your mom left you, like this and that, but that it was not important whatsoever.
Don't gab.
They were like, thank you, like, next
that, yeah. No, I was like, am I the only one that thinks this is like kind of crazy? But
dilly gab.
Yeah, it just was not like serious at all in there. But yeah, like, it's hard to say like what really even happened, because it was so just like, I don't know, like, I guess day in the life. But yeah, like, time passed. It was like the girl, Nana, as a kid, and then the teenager, and then a young adult. And it, like, it kind of just, like, shows, like, clips from her life, like, at each. And then the movie was over. Like, it was so quick and nice, and, like, nothing really happened. But,
did
like,
you like that format? Like, kind of, like, a laid-back, like, storytelling? Or would you have wanted more, like, plot-driven?
I think if I didn't think it was so beautiful to look at, and if it wasn't, like, black people, I probably... Like, saying that as a black person myself, like, I'm saying, like, part of why I was, like, interested to go to the movie is because, like, okay, like, hey, representation. So I, like, I think that, like, I was okay with it because there were other things drawing me to the film. But I think if it was just, like, any old film and it was also like that, I would, like, probably be saying bad things about
it. Have you ever seen the film The Last Black Man in San Francisco?
No.
Because that is a really beautiful film, but it also gets kind of that same critique that it's like, 2 hours, 10 minutes long, and it's essentially about this guy in San Francisco who lives in, like, a not-so-nice area, but then there's this house that's, like, in his family, and he, like, someone else owns it, but he basically breaks in and, like, takes it back and, like, revitalizes this home that's in a very wealthy and, like, do you know what I mean? It's very, like, Victorian architecture, like, statuesque house. And then I won't give any spoilers, but there's some issues with that, and, like, da-da-da, and it's a lot about, like, gentrification and, like, barriers to people. But that's kind of like, I love that film. I like, it's one of my favorite movies, but that's kind of like, it gets that same critique of like, okay, this is like an interesting topic and like really good representation. The actors are really, really good. And like, I think that the person who's the lead actor also like had a part in like writing and directing and stuff. And it's like maybe like slightly based off of something that happened to him or something. So it's like, do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it's like very positive representation, but people are like, it's just too long and like nothing happens. Yeah. Like it literally, like it's so beautiful, but it's like, I wish there was like more going on.
Yeah. I will say it definitely helped that this movie like wasn't super long. I want to say it was literally maybe like an hour.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Oh, wow. Because I was kind of shocked. That was part of why I was like, I was shocked when it ended.
You just like went in and went out.
No, yeah. I was like, how could it be over? Like, we haven't gotten into it yet. But like, there was no like
when you were like, this
of,
is
like,
still
events.
The prologue.
No, yeah, literally. I thought we're still like kind of setting the scene here. But yeah, it was definitely... It was nice to look at. Like, it was, like, and it was an enjoyable experience. There was, like, awesome music and stuff. And I would rate it above another movie that I feel like did the same kind of thing, whereas, like, I was seeing it for the same reasons. Like, because it's, like, oh, it's, like... Yeah, let me just return to my original thought. But, yeah, like, I see it because it's, like, oh, yeah, like, love to see some representation. But then, like, it was way too long and, like, super boring. Mm. But it was still, like, beautiful to look at. But then this one was, like, beautiful to look at, and it was short.
Wait, in which film? Was this also a VIF film?
No. This is one, and I couldn't tell you the name, honestly.
That's okay. That's
it was,
okay.
Like, an outdoor film that I saw, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But,
yeah.
Like, but in it, my like, hometown.
It was, but it, like, reminded you of things you've seen before.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Wait, I just have a question.
Yeah.
How do you think the part of, like, the movie showing the girl, like, trapped on the island was necessary to, like, understanding the rest of the film? Like, the rest of, like, the girl's life? Because you said, like, it was, like, really laid back and you thought it was super important. But then you said, like, the girl's life just, like, kind of folds to be, like, very peaceful afterwards.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, link those two, like, how it might relate.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of like, I don't know, actually, like, they might have mentioned this, but I just wasn't paying attention, but, like, I don't remember the history of how long, actually, like, these people had been on the island, but for some reason it was that, like, oh, like, nobody wants to be here anymore. Like, I don't know if it's that, like, there were no resources or it was just, like, kind of secluded or something, but I think maybe, like, I don't know if it's really answering your question, but, like, I think part of why it didn't matter so much is because it was, like, oh, it's not just, like, her... Like, it's not, like, something went wrong and she's now, like, trapped on this island. Like, this is just kind of, like, their way of life. And, like, she's with, like, all the people that, like, her, like, family, I guess. And, like, her community who also is, like, trapped. But, yeah.
I don't know if that... I hate to cut you off here, but we do have a little bit of an interview to get to. So I'm gonna wrap it on the VIF stuff for right now. But... don't fear, because there's going to be more VIF stuff next week.
Next week, super epic VIF interview.
VIF interview.
Way more VIF content.
Way more VIF content. Mm-hmm. We're doing a double episode, really, about VIF. So that's going to be awesome. But I want to take the time to introduce the Vancouver Outsider Arts Festival and an artist that we got to interview, Ethan White, who is also a dear friend. So that was a really lovely experience. Thank you so much to Ethan for coming into the studio today. So yeah, I'm going to introduce the festival and then I'm going to introduce Ethan as the festival has introduced them. So now in its eighth year, the VOAF, or VOAF, I think is how we were told to pronounce it, has continued to ensure it remains committed to its core values of representation and equity. This year, for the first time ever, an inclusive curatorial committee made up of past VOAF artists and community members helped select the 56 participating visual and performing artists. The artists come from a wide variety of backgrounds and underrepresented communities, and VOAF is proud to be able to provide a platform for them to showcase their work. So Ethan White is a non-binary queer artist who works in various mediums of film, photography, digital art, animation, drawing, and painting. Their work touches upon the subjects of humanity's relationship with technology, gender identity, and their intersections with religion and spirituality. So without any further ado, here is Ethan. With Ethan, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Ethan White. I'm an interdisciplinary artist and filmmaker. Currently attending UBC, currently based in Vancouver, come from Edmonton,
okay,
Alberta.
I'm from Calgary.
Wiskayagan. Oh, good. Okay, great. Well, we're already on the same foot then.
Mm-hmm, literally, bonding. Awesome. Well, I'm so excited to have you here today. We're also joined in the studio by Django, secretly hiding. And you're here to talk about your work as an artist, specifically in the capacity of the Vancouver Outsider Arts Festival. So do you want to just introduce the festival a little bit, and then we'll get into some of your work?
Yeah, totally. So yeah, it's the Vancouver Outsider Arts Festival, or VOAF, as they have told me to call it. I used to call it VOAF, but yeah, VOAF sounds nice. But it's the 8th annual one this year. They've done it every single year. And it's always about providing a platform to artists in the Vancouver area that self-identify as outsiders for some reason or another. And it can be a variety of reasons. It's quite a nice festival because it is a very low barrier of entry. It's kind of catered to people who are getting onboarded into the art world and don't already have their foot in the door. So it's a really, really wonderful opportunity for young artists, especially trying to get their career started.
That's awesome. And how did you get involved with this festival?
I saw it on Instagram.
Nice.
Sometimes that's what it takes, is to be chronically online until you find a post that calls you out for you know, not sharing your art. And so I applied in June of this year. It took about a month and a half. They got back to me, and they've been really supportive ever since as it comes up to like the preparation for this weekend.
Sweet. Yeah. So this weekend, it's from the 11th to the 13th, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome. So there's you, and how many other artists are involved in it? Does it stick to a specific medium, or is there lots of different things? Is there workshops or events or anything like that?
Yeah, there's I think there's about 19 other visual artists exhibiting, but there's also a variety of performance art. So the Roundhouse Community Arts Center, where the show is actually held, is also attached to a theater. So there's also a theater performance aspect to it. And there's also some artist-run workshops who aren't exhibiting directly but are going to be there at present at the festival running some community activities at the same time. So it's very much like a community effort. I'm honored to be a part of it.
Awesome.
As far as the mediums go, for artists like myself, they just gave us wall space. So it's like anything you want that you can hang from a wall realistically, then they will accommodate. And there's one in particular, one TV, which is given to one digital artist. So
nice.
That one will be devoted to some digital video art.
That's so interesting, that kind of question about like, instead of having certain requirements of like what your art should look like or like what themes it needs to fulfill, just being like, okay, here's the space, you know, however you take that, put something on there, we'll show it, we'll support you. And that's actually kind of like in line with a conversation that me and Django and other people were having earlier about like those barriers that the actual gallery space puts on you. And it's like, what would an exhibition look like if there was no, you know, barriers in that? There's no requirements you had to hit. You were just like showing your art.
Yeah, there's already enough barriers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Before the gallery imposes a certain theme on you.
Do you want to speak to that a little bit? That like outsider, I guess?
Yeah, totally. I think first and foremost, like, I am probably the youngest person exhibiting my art.
Congrats.
Here.
That's awesome.
Thank you. That's definitely part of my application was like, man, young people get forgotten.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so hard when you're coming up trying to like make a name for yourself, or even if that's not your goal, just like make a difference. It's hard to make a difference, especially in any capacity that it feels like official in a way. There's grassroots of efforts and things like that, which young people are really good at. But like when it comes to getting involved with their municipality, getting involved with like with institution, is like, I feel like youth is often so forgotten,
mm-hmm.
especially like youth that isn't also coming from here and don't have a lot of like support networks. So definitely moving out here, not having a car, not having financial stability. And then also like the pressure that it's particularly young artists face to, commercialize their artwork and refine their practice. A lot of advice that I've been given has been like, figure out what you're good at and stick to it. Do that one thing so people know that it's you.
Hmm.
don't you know, express yourself in the way that you feel is true to your soul and your heart and your being, but like find the thing that people will recognize you for, because that's all they're going to care about.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. And I think that this is like the wall space idea is a good idea, because it's like I have a variety of stuff that I'm showing and it really doesn't adhere to any specific medium, and it allows a little more exploration.
It kind of like takes away from that idea of like the objectification of art. Like they want you as the artist, and like whatever you want to present as the artist is accepted, rather than like, okay, we like your art because we have like a certain, you know, preconceived idea of like what your art looks like, and we want to, you know, have that specific thing. It's like, okay, we appreciate this artist, we want to support them and like their growth. So I think that that's really great. And yeah, I think that thing about like maybe young people not being able to get involved in the institution very easily or very accessibly is so interesting. And I think that that's something that I've definitely like grappled with, like, oh my God, to do the things that I'm thinking of in my head, I really do need to some extent work with the institution or within the institution or for the institution. But I really don't want to do that.
No.
And it's so interesting to like try to find the kind of like ways to like weave in and out of that, where you're not like 100% giving into that institutional mindset. And I think that that is something that like you and other young people that are able to kind of break into that institutional space, but maybe not like completely conform to it. I think that that's so significant, because like you get to keep your individuality, but you also get to like play in the big leagues, and then you can like kind of be like, whoa, okay, like that experience was so insightful, like what can I take from that to grow myself as an artist and like my practice and my work in my community, you know, et cetera, et cetera, but not like completely give in and like lose your passion.
Yeah, absolutely. And you really run the risk of doing that anytime that you kind of step into a space where you're ready to be evaluated for your work. Even like even a university will do that to you. An educational system will already do that to you. So yeah, you got to find ways of preserving your identity, for sure.
And so do you want to speak a little bit more to your art? Not to get into those preconceived notions, but what kinds of things are you planning on like exhibiting at this show?
Yeah, for sure. I have a... Well, the wall space really was a little bit limiting. I make a lot of video art and film art. And I was really hoping to get that one TV, but it went to somebody who exclusively makes that kind of art. So all deserved. But at the show itself, I have some drawings. I've made one painting. I've done a lot of digital illustration that I've also printed out on photo paper, and a lot of digital photography that I've worked up over the years. It really is like a collection, like a body of work that has developed over the last 4-5 years. So it feels nice to put it all in one place. And then honestly, I'll probably be able to move on from it and go on to the next thing, because I'll feel satisfied that it all kind of found a home in the end.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's so interesting. So is that like you're planning on being done with kind of that like physical print media and move more into like filmmaking? Is that your plans?
I don't know if I'll leave it behind or not. I definitely am wanting to get back into film and video art. And lean into that more heavily, for sure, especially as I'm finishing up my last year of visual art at university. That's the kind of thing that that they want to see from me a lot. So I've done a lot of exercise in that.
Right.
But it'll be definitely a more organic coming to those mediums in the future, where it's like I will partake in those print media when it calls to me, and I'll explore what I want. But it won't be something I'm concentrating on for a career or for a grade nearly as much. And, you know, the passion really is there for the filmmaking aspect of it. So I think it'll be natural to move into that.
Yeah, totally. Do you have, like, experience with exhibiting your work outside of UBC, or is this kind of a first time?
I've had one show with a very small gallery called Slice of Life Gallery last year. And I have another one coming up in February this year.
Plug it. What's your show?
It's Love and Anti-Love is the theme at Slice of Life Gallery. I believe it's February 7th is their February collective show. But that was really fun. A very, very easy introduction. But this is certainly the biggest art show I've ever been a part of. And it is definitely the biggest step that it feels like in terms of like the art, quote unquote, career that I'm trying to build. Because it's partnered with the city itself. So it's like,
right,
I feel a little bit of pressure.
Yeah, no. And that's so funny. I'm glad we're having this talk because something that we've talked about is how I was like approached with this opportunity and your name was like dropped as like one of the people to interview. And I was like, oh my gosh, I know Ethan. So interesting to like be, I guess, like understanding that we're kind of in this community that maybe I don't necessarily see all the time or I'm always aware of. And then I will literally like recognize someone I know's name in like a publicist's email to me. And I'm like, wow, oh my gosh, I actually am like more connected to things than I know. And I'm sure that you kind of feel the same way, like even having this like going on right now. So
yeah, totally. I mean, I'm in CITR. That's yeah. Like awesome.
Yeah.
I love being in here. And yeah, I worked on the festival circuit this summer. I worked at Folk Fest and Children's Fest in Vancouver. And I just got a message from one of the people I worked with who's also working this festival. And they saw my name on a piece of paper
That's
and said,
awesome.
Wait, this you?
That's awesome.
And it was like, yeah. Are you there? What? Wait. It was just really, it's nice to stumble on community like that. It's really quite sweet.
Yeah. So I guess that brings me to a question about what being an artist means to you and also in the capacity of this festival or the community or being kind of a public figure to some extent. How does that title artist sit with you? Do you grapple with that at all? Or does it come naturally? Because I know a lot of people have kind of different takes on that. Mm-hmm. And especially for something like you're like showing your work at a festival where they're sending emails bragging about you. And I say that in like a completely positive way, but like, how does that feel to like, I don't know, see that happening?
Yeah, it feels good in a lot of ways. It feels legitimizing.
Yeah.
It also definitely feels like a responsibility. The more, you know, I don't deal with public attention on my personhood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't deal with that as well as, yeah. You know, attention on the art. So I'm grateful for the moniker of artist to kind of have a little bit of anonymity. People, I hope someday will know more about the work than me,
yeah.
In particular. But as an artist, and as you're right, like as a public figure, there is also like a responsibility to ensure that I'm making choices that, you know, I agree with. I have a platform. I want to be able to speak about things that I think matter,
mm-hmm.
and make sure that I'm able to think before I speak. And take the time to really consider what I have to say, because if people are listening and they think what I have to say has an impact, that's yeah. a lot of responsibility that I need to make sure that I'm taking into account before I, you know,
yeah.
shoot off my mouth on yeah. something or other, right?
It's like that, like, think before you draw kind of, like,
yeah.
mentality.
Yeah, well, it's like you can draw whatever you want. Like, yeah. as an artist, you are supposed to let it
yeah.
come out of you, and I totally support that. But when it comes to, like, sharing that then,
mm-hmm.
there's always like a thought about, does this belong in the public sphere? Does this belong where anybody can happen on it? Or is it something that I just needed to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
For myself.
And how does that distinction like come to you? Like what would go into that decision, I guess?
Definitely just let it sit for a minute is
yeah.
what I do. But I also am like so grateful that I have a community of people that I really trust their tastes, and I also trust their perspectives. Luckily, their perspectives are also a lot more diverse than mine. So I'm able to kind of get input from people that I love around me. And if my community and the people that I've built up and the people I trust approve of what I have to say, then I'll have a lot more confidence of taking it to another space.
Sweet. Yeah,
so,
that's
yeah.
awesome. I just want to ask a little bit more about your artistic process, or I guess how you came into being an artist that feels comfortable in like showing their work, as opposed to somebody that is still totally an artist in their own right, but maybe isn't feeling as confident in like calling themselves an artist or exhibiting or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And also more just about like these specific works that you're showing, like how those came to be, things that were going through your head.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, journey as an artist, I feel like I've drawn pictures since I was really, really young.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout my you know, school journey, essentially, I cycled through a lot of different mediums. I went into photography, and I was wanting to be a professional dancer at one point, and all these things kind of came and went, and I started making films, and
mm-hmm.
it was something that was always present and important in my life, but I definitely didn't have something that I stuck to whatsoever. And I mean, I guess I still don't really. But once I got to university, it was less. It was like I started thinking a lot more about the reasons I was making art, and I would go into making an art piece with the intention of making it a certain way or representing a certain idea. Whereas in the past, it's always been kind of instinctive, and I hadn't really unpacked that very much. And it's kind of funny, like all art, I think, comes from a place of instinct and a place of impulse. And it's always the art school thing to like assign meaning to it and like, oh, this is what I was intending all along. The clock signifies the mortality of humanity. It's like, it's all funny and it's really, really silly. But once you start to do that, you realize that people will start to see that.
Yeah.
So if you can take the time to, you know, look at what you made from instinct and try and kind of psychoanalyze the reasons why you did, you'll be able to learn a lot more about the art that you make and what you can do in the future, as well as learn a lot more about yourself. And that allows you to have a little bit more confidence that when you say something, you mean it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's something that I think is so interesting and so important. I've also been thinking about that, like, the assigning of meaning and, like, why can't we, let things have meaning just as themselves without necessarily always having to pick things apart. But I was talking about this with someone also, like, a little while ago about the idea that humans, like, love to see patterns and, like, you will literally find a meaning in anything if you can. And kind of, this is going off on a tangent a little bit here, but like with modern art having like very abstracted pieces and then like such a simple title and you're like, oh, like maybe I can kind of see it. And just, I don't know, that's definitely like on my mind. So yeah, I like your take on it though.
No, but you're so right. And that does bring up something that I also really care about, which is the experience so often when you go to an art gallery and you, especially when you pay for entry to an art gallery and you go see an installation and it's like steel pipes on the ground and a pile of sand and it's like life is the title. And that has a place and I think it is really good, but I also like, I care a lot about accessibility when it comes to art. I think that ideally, if art is a method of communication, that shouldn't really happen. Nobody should walk out of an art gallery and be like, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
That means that, you know, enough things were, like, enough steps weren't taken to get the message across. And
right.
Sometimes, you know, there's a balance to strike about being too obvious and being, you know, and being too obscure. But I think that's really what you want to reach the most amount of people possible, especially when you think you have something important to share.
Yeah. So. And I think that completely, I mean, I'm maybe not as well versed in this as you are, but I think that that goes with the thinking of like the Vancouver Outsiders Art Festival very well of like, okay, we're coming together and we're making this thing and we're opening it to the public and like, come look at this, even if maybe you haven't accepted it before, you haven't accepted us before. And I wanted to just check in with you about the cost of the festival as well. So if you want to speak to that.
Yeah, it is totally free to attend.
Awesome.
So if you have spare time, that's all it will cost you, which is really, I can't ask for any more, really.
Are you interested in playing, watching, or discussing all things cricket? Look no further than UBC's Cricket Club. Reach out to @AMSUBCCricketClub on Instagram to get connected today.
The Bite Kitchen welcomes you to Access Night, a weekly event in the shop offering free tool rentals for queer and trans folks, with the purpose being to make bike mechanics more inviting and accessible to folks traditionally excluded from the industry. Visit the Bike Kitchen on Wednesdays from 6:15 to 9 p.m., located in the basement of the Life Building.
Vous écoutez Café Musique à CITR 101.9 FM, en diffusion du territoire non cédé de la Nation Musqueam à l'Université de la Colombie-Britannique Vancouver. Je m'appelle Antje et chaque mois je vous propose un mélange musical pour vous faire découvrir la diversité des rythmes du monde francophone. L'émission est produite en collaboration avec le Centre de la Francophonie de UBC. Vous pouvez en apprendre plus sur le centre et ses activités à francophonie.ubc.ca.